The Syrian government has agreed to allow Iraqis living in Syria to vote in the January 30th election in Iraq. Syria is one of 14 countries cooperating with the United Nations, which is organizing voter registration and polling places for Iraqis living abroad. As many as 200,000 Iraqis now live in Syria. Some are long-term residents, others are newcomers who fled the violence back home. Election politics among Iraqis in Syria reflect the tensions in Iraq itself, as NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Damascus.
How to tell Iraqis they can register and vote in Syria, hold a news conference, use the Syrian media to get out the word. That's what Luis Martinez Betenthos, head of the out-of-country voting program, did today. A media campaign that will run in Syrian newspapers, on radio and television.
So the intention is obviously to reach one on each of the Iraqis living in Syria.
The international staff here will set up 150 polling stations for Iraqi voters. Many have experience with elections. Australian Greg Borup worked on the Afghan vote a few weeks ago.
I was quite cynical about the elections in Afghanistan. However, a lot of that cynicism faded away, and it didn't really matter what we thought. It's what they thought, and they were very enthusiastic about the process. And it was quite nice, actually. To see.
There is enthusiasm here as a blackboard is set up, papers handed out in a sports center in downtown Damascus, where Iraqis hired to help with the election are trained in voter education.
So hopefully we'll gonna work together starting with tomorrow.
But there are no Sunni Muslims in this group of Iraqi election workers. And that reflects challenges for the vote back home, where many Sunnis say they will either boycott or are afraid to vote. This group is mostly Shiite Muslims and Christians. Belkais al-Musawi, a lawyer in Syria, comes from the Shiite holy city of Najaf. She says it is her duty to vote.
We hope to make a good homeland for the future.
Iraq's majority Shiite community has been the most enthusiastic about the ballot. For the first time, it's a chance for Shia Muslims persecuted under Saddam to gain power in Iraq. Musawi says the problem is the voting lists are so complicated, she has no idea who to vote for.
There are many lists, so we don't know whom we must vote. We want the best.
Who's the best?
We don't know.
21-year-old Itay Joseph is a Christian from Mosul in northern Iraq. His parents sent him to Syria to keep him safe. He is sure his family will not vote. The resistance there has threatened to kill anyone who does. So Joseph is voting in Syria for the hopes of his family in Iraq.
They want a new Iraq without war, without madness. If we vote, if we get a government, we're going to get a good army, we're going to get support from other countries, everything is going to get cool.
But Iraq's Sunni Muslims here in Damascus don't share that optimism. Many of them say they want no part of this vote. Abdul Razak al-Dulaim, a former professor at Baghdad University, was a Ba'ath Party member, a Saddam supporter, who fled to Syria after U.S. forces invaded Iraq.
I am very much against these elections. In my bones, I am against these elections. You will not find any honest Iraqi who would take part in this ugly farce.
U.S. officials have stressed the importance of the election and the participation of all Iraqis. But Syrian officials say they have urged Washington to work harder to convince Sunni Muslims to vote. They say a boycott by this community will only mean more violence on Syria's border. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Damascus.
From time to time over the past year and a half, we've heard commentaries from Holly Rossi about her husband, Rob. He was a reservist, and after he was activated in February of 2003, he spent 11 months overseas. Just when they thought he was going to come back to the States, his tour was extended. But he's finally home now, and Holly Rossi says their involvement in the war is over. Rob has been discharged from the Army.
We framed Rob's honorable discharge certificate and put it right on our mantle. Soon afterwards, we got an email from an Army buddy of his who had also been set free. The email happily announced an upcoming party, but then it said, "All of you who now put your country second will be invited." Like Rob, this friend had served the full term he signed up for when he was commissioned as an officer, and then some. So why, behind the mirth of his email, did we sense that he was feeling less than honorable about his discharge? It's been a strange time for Rob and his friend to get word that they're now civilians. Soldiers have been growing increasingly vocal about their displeasure at the Army's stop-loss policy, which allows the Army to keep soldiers in the service even beyond their agreed-upon commitment dates. Tours are being extended, and the Reserves and National Guard in particular are being tested as never before. It's no wonder, then, that Rob and his fellow freshly decommissioned officers are wrestling with a decent measure of guilt that he's left the rest of the war to be fought by somebody else. During the long months of Rob's deployment, we both felt a tremendous sense of pride because Rob was contributing something to the war on terror. Now a mister instead of a captain, though, he joins the helpless masses who are left to observe and opine about foreign policy from a very safe distance. Don't get me wrong, he's grateful and relieved to have that luxury. But counting his 4 years of ROTC in college, Rob was in the military for 13 years. We're gladly letting go of the anxiety that came along with his service, but it's harder to let go of the pride. Pride in his country is something that Rob is realizing he doesn't actually have to let go of, and shouldn't. He might not be a soldier anymore, but Rob is still an American, and America is still at war. But there are many ways to serve your country, and Rob and his buddies don't have to wear a uniform to serve theirs any longer. They've done more than most of their peers, and they've earned their lives back. Putting their country second? No. I think at our friend's party, the former soldiers should remind each other of a very simple fact. It's called an honorable discharge for a reason.
Holly Rossi lives outside of Boston. To hear the other commentaries she wrote while Rob was away and to see pictures, visit our website, npr.org. Our program is directed by Bob Boylan, edited by Franklin Cater, and produced by Graham Smith. The technical director is Linda Mack.
At the foreign desk, Lauren Jenkins, Ted Clark, Bob Duncan, Kevin Beasley, Jeff Sandman, Douglas Roberts, Dee Dee Skanky, and Rena Advani.
Librarians include Denise Chen, Catherine Baer, Beth Howard, Giselle Foss, Dan Onstead, Maureen Clements, and Robert Goldstein.
Our executive producer is Christopher Turpin. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.